Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 16th, 2015. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Where's the twang?
No, I know. I've been trying to hold on to it as long as I could, but been home back here in the Yankee version of the South, which is Tampa, Florida, where all the Northerners come to move.
Yeah.
And accent gone, just like that.
Man, you were sounding pretty good there for a while.
Yeah, I enjoy it up there. I like being called sweetie and honey every time I get my sweet tea filled up.
Sweet tea. So how did it go?
Great. You know, it was a really great. Here's one of the things that I like about the Ante Up Poker Tour. You know, one is that we like to partner. I mean, we're going to partner with anybody that really wants to do business with us. But we like to partner. I particularly like to partner with rooms that are trying to move the needle, trying to push something, trying to get their word out about who they are and where they are. Right. I mean, everybody's heard of the really big places, so. You know, when you have some place like Pearl River Resort that calls me up and says, hey, we'd love to bring the Ante Up Tour here because, you know, we just finished these $70 million in renovations and we want people to know who we are. One, that feels good that they're coming to us to get that word out, right? But it's great to kind of do those kind of events because everybody's, like, really excited. Obviously, the downside is when it's a new event, just like, you know, when we first launched the magazine, we only had 10,000 readers, maybe,
right.
And now we built it up. So, you know, quite honestly, we didn't have a huge turnout for this event, but I think everybody came out and was really excited. They got to see the property. Everybody that was there and stayed overnight in one of these rooms just raved about them. And so I think it accomplished our goals. It got people to come to Pearl River. Got them to see what a great place it is to come play poker and hang out and bring the wife and kids or the husband, and they'll be back. And then from now, the goal is to build from the future. So, you know, I fully expect we'll be back there next October for another event. And we're already talking to them about doing some other Ante Up branded stuff throughout the year. So we're going to continue to help get the word out about this great property, Pearl River in Mississippi.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, and that's the thing about it is you have to always have a first one. And the first one here, obviously, people got to see the awesome place and experience it. And then if a lot of people didn't show up, then there's a layover, and people love that too. So
Yeah. There's
always that potential as well. So I think it's going to be, obviously, next time I think it'll be even bigger and better because
Oh, definitely. Just the word
of mouth and experience now that everybody has doing it. Looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, and there's some other great things came out of it. I mean, Eric Comer and his crew were hired to direct the tournament, and folks in Mississippi would know who Eric and his crew are because he runs all the Beau Rivage events.
Right.
But he also does events around the country as well, too. And they really ran a fantastic event. And I think that made a big difference. I mean, that's kind of the other thing is when you go into and you're trying to get established out here and you bring folks in and the event isn't well run, then it's almost a negative at that point, a double negative at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, people come in and know the event was run well, and then they're encouraged to come back. And I was really impressed. You know, I played a couple events in the bowl in the tournament series in the past, but never for a long period of time. So this is my first time actually getting to know Eric and watching his crew work, and really felt ecstatic to have him there and make sure the event was being run well. So that was great.
Cool.
And then you're always looking for a really good story from the main event winner, right? Because we put the main event winner on the cover of the magazine. That's, you know, the best real estate we have. And, you know, so when you're sitting there watching the tournament, you know, kind of grind down to, you know, 20 players and then the final table, and you're starting to get to know these players a little bit better, you know, the journalist in here is always hoping that it's going to be a good story, right?
Right.
And fortunately, I think over the course of the NEF Tour event, we've always had good stories, and we've had good stories from people that were second, third, or at the final table as well, too. So we've been real lucky in that, I think. I haven't had any really tough interviews where people are, you know, the, you know, you watch that on TV after a football game or baseball game, right? And poor sideline reporters trying to, you know, squeeze blood out of a turnip.
Yeah, yep.
How do you feel? Oh, I'm just happy we won. You know, yeah, it's really tough, right? So it's nice when you have a story. And I thought we got a pretty interesting story this time. So our main event winner, a gentleman by the name of Shiler Thornton. He calls Houston home now. Plays poker for a living, mostly the big cash games in Texas. But he does travel from time to time to tournaments. He just had a big win up at Windstar during the River Series. He's played some Heartland events and has done well. And I watched him, obviously, most of day two because he came into day two as the chip leader. And really solid player, right?
Yeah.
So he ended up winning. And so we're doing the post-tournament interview. And so what happened was his girlfriend lives in Houston, and she decided to have a girls' weekend this weekend, right?
Yeah.
Went with all the friends.
Yep.
So he's kind of by himself, and he's like, oh, well, I'm going to drive and see play some poker. Well, there's another Mississippi property that was just beginning a tournament series when ours was ending. So he drove up to that one. And when he got there, people talking about our event over at Pearl River, which is great, by the way. And he's like, all right. And he drove over, got there just in time for the final day one flight on Saturday night. And as I mentioned, ended up with the chip leader of the tournament after that flight, game of the next day, and pretty much went wire to wire. And that's the story. He had no idea about it and showed up and won.
Wow. You do realize that you are supposed to say spoiler alert before something like that.
Well, yeah.
Now everyone picks up the magazine who's written, you know, going, oh, I know this story. I don't need to read it now.
No, but see, that now it's teasing. Now they got to pick it up so they can show their friends. I'm like, you got to read the story. And the people are going to read it. They're like, oh my gosh, I thought you were going to say this guy cured cancer. He just, you know, had a girlfriend who played in the weekend. I'm like, yeah. But I thought that was an interesting story. And, the other thing, too, I put on the show notes, but I know you read the story, so what was interesting was I had never seen this in any of the NEF Tour events that I've been covering. When it got down to three-handed, all three players were really statistically even in chips.
Yeah.
You know, within the, say statistically, the whatever the deviation, right? You know,
right.
Really, it was very minor, the difference between. And a lot of events, usually at that point, people were like, all right, let's just chop it up, right? But they had a lot of play because the tournament structure was very good, I thought. So they had a lot of play at that time. So I don't think anybody, at least I didn't hear it even at the table, anybody ever talking chop. I mean, there might have been conversations that I wasn't privy to. But they came back and played. Very first hand, Shiler knocks out one of the other players.
Man. That's huge.
I'm like, can you imagine that? Like, first hand back when you're all even, and you're sitting there thinking, all right, this three-hand thing's going to last for hours now, right?
Yeah.
Very first hand. And it wasn't even one of those sick, like, set-over-set kind of things. Shiler flopped a straight and rivered a 10-high flush, you know, one of those great, I improved my hands, but I didn't really want to improve, right?
Right.
Situations. And the other guy shoved all in on him, and he called, and he mucked his hand, so we actually never know what he had.
Huh.
So now Shiler, massive chip leader over the other player, was really tough. She's a regular on the Mississippi tournament circuit,
right.
And really tough player as well too. And she hung with him and got lucky at one point. And you know, when they got it all in, he had the better hand, and she caught up. And then eventually the luck ran out. But very interesting final three, I thought.
I would have to disagree with you that he had a massive chip lead, though.
Wow.
It's just 2-1. That's all it is. 2-1. If you have two chips and I have one, do you have a massive chip lead over
me? Anytime you want to come to the house and we'll do a little two-person sit and go, and you start me off at 2-1, I'm taking that action, all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
You claim that it's not huge, all you want.
Not massive though. I'll give you that. I wouldn't want to start that way, but I would say, oh, this is insurmountable. If I double up once, I have 2-1. How is that? Yeah, I love busting your chops.
And another highlight too. You know, it's the first event there, so I didn't see a lot of familiar faces. At least, I saw some that I recognized from other places, but not a lot from our Annie Up family there. But I do want to give a shout out to Jason Grimes, one of our podcast fans, a frequent contributor to the show. He lives up near the Memphis area and came down. He and I have been emailing a lot leading up to the event. So I was glad to see that he came down. And not only that, he cashed in the main event.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's always great, right? When that money goes back into the Andy Up Nation. And had a real brutal, I feel bad. He was playing really well on day two and just got the bubble burst. And so, you know, I don't like to go over and bother people when they're playing, so I usually kind of wait till the break to go over and say, hey, you know, thanks for coming down, Jason. Nice to see you, right? And so the bubble just burst. They're just starting to play. I go to get a soda or use the can or whatever, right, and come back. And I look over at the table where he was at, and he's gone. And I'm like, man, they already moved people around? They just, you know, got down to 18, right?
Jeez.
So I look around, I'm like, dude isn't here. So I go over to the tournament director, and I look up at the clock, and I'm like, I see that we're down to 17 now. I'm like, oh my God, we lost the player. It had to be him. And I'm like, the moves player? He's like, oh yeah, it was brutal.
Oh no.
Aces over kings. And I'm like, great. The one guy I know in the whole field. And but then I caught up with him afterwards, and we had a good time chatting. And I appreciate you coming out, Jason. I'm glad you took some money home.
That's awesome.
All right, and then just a reminder, the next events for the Annie Up Tour, we have an Annie Up Set Sail Series at Dover Downs in Delaware on October 28th through November 1st. Every event that you enter, and I believe there's 7 of them in that series, you get a raffle ticket. And on the final day, they're going to keep pulling names until 5 winners claim Annie Up Poker Cruise packages for our April 18th sailing out of Port Canaveral. So you can win not only a lot of money, but you can also win a cruise. And you could actually win, I guess, 5 cruises if you wanted to. Bring your whole family. They're just going to keep drawing names until, you know, people claim, right? And then, of course, our next championship event, Annie Up Tour event, will be at Thunder Valley again in Sacramento, California. That will be November 21st through 29th. And the winner of the main event will appear on the January cover of Anti Up. So we can get details on both of these events at antiuppokertour.com.
All right. So we got more global poker news.
Yeah, everyone's he's real strategic. I've been on, you know, when he releases stuff.
So. Yeah, and I wondered if we had known about this a little bit before. Did we touch on this at all before? I know we talk about sportifying it all the time. But did we know? We knew about some of this, did we?
Well,
or no?
We knew that, of course, we're talking about Alex Dreyfus at the Global Poker Index, and he's launching his Global Poker League. I think we did mention it this summer because he did a big presentation about it at the Poker TDA Summit that I was at.
Right.
But at that point, he just had really kind of broad strokes as to what this was going to be. Now he's actually getting down into the nitty-gritty of how this is going to happen. And so what he announced last week was that the league is going to launch in early 2016, so a couple months from now. Mm-hmm. It's going to have 12 franchises worldwide, and it's going to be split between the Americas and Europe and Asia. So a couple here in America for our American listeners. Here's some of the interesting innovations, and obviously there are more, but these are the ones that I thought were really kind of different, worth us talking about. Some of these league events will be broadcast online. Actually, they all will be broadcast online, but some will actually be held live in what he's calling the Cube. It's a 20-foot one-way soundproof cube that he's going to drop in the middle of a major sports arena and sell tickets to people who will sit around and watch these people play kind of like hamsters, right? Or fish in a big bowl, right?
I guess.
And so 3 of each team's 5 players will be chosen on GPL draft day. So I'm sure that'll be a big televised kind of event, right?
Yeah.
Mass is going to be heads up, so they're going to be a little quicker. They're also going to use digital cards, but real chips, and players will be standing.
Huh.
And then finally, prize pools will come from sponsorships and ticket and merch sales. Players are not going to be buying it. So he's trying to change the financial dynamics of poker, where you want to play in the World Series, you got to plunk down $10,000. So these players are all going to play essentially for free, and they're going to win money based off of other revenue streams.
Yeah, you have to use whatever clout you have with Alex to get me into this team. I mean, you get to just free roll the plays. It's awesome.
Well, I'm going to assume that these players are part of their team contract. He's doing a ton of promotion for this league, too. So
I'm willing.
It's not just show up and play and cash and go home. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, this is going to be a dream come true for some players, I think.
Well, I think we do enough promotion for Global Poker League. Put us on a team.
We need an Andy Up team. We need our own franchise.
That's right. We need our own franchise down in the southeast of the United States. We put them in the magazine. We write about them. We put them on the show. I'm on our website. I'm ready, man. Give us a spot.
So what I'm interested to see how this is going to happen. I'm interested to see the discussion in the poker world over the next couple of months, after the scene, leading up to the launch, and definitely after it launches, because I think we're going to have two schools of thought on this, right? You're going to have traditional players that like the game the way it is now and are happy with how it's televised and all that and want to see that format, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have the folks that are on, I think, Team Alex here, that are like, all right, yeah, we all like the game the way we like to play, but to take it to that next level, to get people back into the game that aren't into the game now, you got to do some different stuff with it. And it's going to rankle the traditionalists a little bit, but, just relax and let it play out and see how it is. So obviously he's trying to do that by he wants to, you're trying to think about how to get people to watch on TV now, right?
Yeah.
We already with the whole card cameras and all that are able to edit it down and make it more or less exciting on TV. But it's really hard to make live poker exciting ever, right? Unless you've got it's Hunger Games or some stuff. So I think that's what he's trying to do here. He's making it so it's a very quick game. Heads-up matches, I don't really know the difference between these digital cards versus real chips. I guess real chips are more of a, Hollywood kind of thing that you want to have stacks of chips in front of you, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The cards are quicker, I guess, because you don't have to have a dealer, right? It's just, bing, bing, bang. And standing up, so obviously players are not going to get too comfortable when they got to stand. There's some players, I can imagine, they're going to get that call on draft day, and they're going, yeah, that's all right.
I don't feel like standing for 6 hours.
Yeah, you guys have some fun with that whole standing thing. I'll catch up with you later. But yeah, so a lot of stuff. All that is designed to make it a quick game and exciting. And really, let's be honest. Again, we're going to lowest common denominator review here. To bring a player in that doesn't really know poker anymore. After the boom was different. Boom at that point was just exciting to see poker played on TV, right?
Yeah.
Now it's going to be even more exciting than that to get somebody to turn off of, whatever other sporting event they're watching. And I'm not saying this is definitely the way to go, but I like his approach to it. And I know there could be other people that absolutely hate this.
Well, here's the deal. I don't think they're going to absolutely hate it because the fundamental game itself is not being changed. And the reason why I bring that up is
because. That's a very good
point. In the bowling world, I have to always go to my bowling roots.
Sure.
It's boring. And most of the qualifying for the TV stuff is boring. And so on a world level, they're considering and trying different ways of scoring. And it's like, all right, wait a minute. That's like saying if you score a touchdown in football, let's make it 2.5 points instead of 6. And it's like you're changing the fundamental part of the game. When you start changing the scoring and you start mixing with what things mean, that's when you're screwing with it too much, I think. And people are going to be ticked off. In this instance, it's not traditional, but I can see, how when we used to watch the NBC Heads Up Championship, the Caesars all the time?
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't live, it was edited. It felt live because of all the heads-up matches going on at once. They can go from one to another.
Right, there's activity.
There's activity. These guys are on their feet already, so it's not going to take much for them to get excited and jump around and bounce around because they're already up on their feet, and they're trying to stay active and alive and awake, because they're they're not sitting there falling asleep. Now they're on their feet. They have to be, you know, you got it in pretty good shape, too. So I can imagine a lot of these guys who are getting drafted aren't going to be, you know, 75 years old with a cane.
Yeah, I wonder if my crafts players are going to try to work their way in and they're like, hey, I got to stay in my game.
That's right. But, I mean, yeah, there's going to be a divide.
Too,
but
not to interrupt, but there is a shot clock, too, which I didn't mention. So.
Yeah, see, that makes it exciting.
Yeah,
because
so I think the idea is that...
Moving along, right?
You know, the most boring part of poker now is the guy that takes 12 minutes to make a decision on the call, right?
Right.
And if you're watching that live, you're like, I mean, gosh, can you imagine 12 minutes? People can't even sit through 2 minutes of commercials in between before they're flipping channels, right?
Yeah.
I get 12 minutes of this guy with his hat screwed on backwards, thinking about stuff that you can't even comprehend, right? So now, with all this stuff going on, it's, you know, you got to make quick decisions. And it's almost like watching an online poker guy play live. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is huge now because the shot clock, or whatever you want to call it, that makes them have to operate at a pace that will keep it interesting. There's always going to be action. Every 24 seconds, you know, somebody has to have made a move already. And so the same way, and because it's digital, like you said, you're not going to have to worry about shuffling and dealing and all that. It's boom, boom, boom. It's the cards are there. Boom, the cards are there. Boom, you know what I mean? So I think it has a lot of potential, I think. I think that, especially a heads-up format, too. You know, I mean, sometimes heads-up is boring, but you know, when you think about it, when you're watching poker on TV, even though there's 10 guys at the table or 9 guys at the table or whatever, it ends up being heads up anyway in each hand, basically.
And the best hands ends up being.
Yeah.
Right.
So what's the difference? Now you've got, and if you got five, each team's five players are playing, if they're all playing at once, you know, I'm assuming they're going to have multiple, like, matches going on at once.
I don't know. I mean, it depends. You can only have one in the cube, right? I guess they could have smaller cubettes around, but I don't know.
Right. I mean, 20 feet.
But I would think if you're doing, if it's
a lot.
I don't know how they're going to do these things. If it's going to be, you know, kind of, you know, going back to my cross country roots, just to brag because you were polling, right?
Right.
You know, we had dual meets where just two teams were playing, running against each other, and then you had invitationals on the weekends when 20 teams were in there.
Right.
So I don't know whether, like, all these franchises are going to come together for all the events and they're going to do some kind of round robin kind of thing, or whether it's going to be like a traditional sports league where, you know, New York is flying out to Los Angeles to play them. And if that's the case, then you've just got five heads-up matches.
Yeah, because 20 feet, a 20-foot cube, there's plenty of room in there for two or three of those mini heads-up
probably,
tables.
Probably, but the picture I saw, it looked like it was just like one big table and two guys, which I think that's what you want to do, right? You don't want to have... You know, let's go back to my Winter Olympics obsession, curling, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're watching curling, there's like seven matches going on at the same time. But and I find it frustrating because the TV would never switch over to another one. They would, you know, when I'm turning in to watch, you know, Canada versus USA, that's the match I'm watching. But you see these other matches going on, it distracts you.
Yeah.
So I think what you really want is, I think this is the genius of it, is focusing on these two guys or girls, two players in this cube, battling it out. And then, you know, obviously I think the hope is that you're going to become, you know, like a Cubs fan, you're going to become a, you know, Florida Flush fan, right, or whatever.
Florida Flush.
And cheer for your teammates. But even if you're not, you're just a casual guy tuning in. Now, you know, poker is now, you've got, you know, nine people at that table, plus they keep bebopping around the other tables. And it's hard to pick somebody out to root for, right?
Yeah.
Now you've got two people. You know, even if you're just like my wife and I, you're out drinking, you know, at the bar, and some kind of, like, you know, World Strongman competition comes on, and we're like, hey, let's put $5 down on that. You can pick one or the other. You don't have to know anything about anything, right? You're just going to pick a guy. Now with this, I mean, same thing. You know, people out there have no idea about poker. They go, oh, I like how that guy dresses, or I like how that woman conducts it, whatever, you know? And you only get two people to choose from. I think that kind of makes it a bit more exciting rather than have, you know, kind of a battle royale in WWE when
it's gonna
all
be,
10 people, they're battling it out in the cube at once.
You know, and I think they're going to be looking for a lot of feedback, too, after those first few matches or first few events or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You know, especially if you're putting in a major sports arena and then you're expecting to get a few thousand people to show up for two guys to play poker, it's going to be tough. You know, it's one thing if it's the World Championship, the World Series, and it's been building for 6 months, and then you watch them all day the day before, narrow down to two, and then you're coming back the next day to watch it. It's another thing to make a special trip to go to Dallas Stadium or something to watch two guys play poker at a time. You know, that's kind of tough to pull off. But if you got like five or six heads-up matches going, then it's like, okay, you can kind of have a lot of something that you want to choose, or everybody has their own favorite player, so you might have one match that you want to choose because it's your favorite, but your friend likes this guy, so he's going to be able to watch his match, and you know, right. Instead of sitting through four other matches before they get to your favorite player and stuff. So we'll see how it runs. I'm real interested to see how this goes, because it could be really good.
I was sitting here just thinking, and you stumbled on an answer to my question, I think. I was like, well, these major sports arenas, I mean, that's going to cut out the United States, because you know, there's no major sports arena that gambling is allowed in. You know, maybe that Mohegan Sun basketball arena is on tribal land. I don't know.
Right.
Outside of that, I don't know what you can do. But I just realize now, if people aren't gambling, which they're not, right?
Right. That's why they're not gambling. Because
you can do this anywhere, right? He's just, you know, it's a performance, right?
Yeah, they didn't put any money in. It's performance like golf.
Yeah.
Although I guess they do pay money to enter their tournaments. But yeah, see, it's just so bizarre.
We're not going
to
go down that rabbit hole. But yeah, the point is, I mean, how can someone come in and shut you down now when you're not playing for anything? Although I guess, I mean, now that I just said that, you know, we had this in the middle of the night raid down here in Florida over Bar League, right? Where people weren't paying either, but they were winning something. They were getting a bar tab. So here you're winning something, right? You're getting whatever. So I guess he probably could still run into some regulatory problems. That's going to be interesting now that I think about it.
Huh. Yeah, but let's see what
But maybe he was just planning on doing that in Europe anyhow, where he's more based. So
yeah, but it says worldwide, and most of the poker players in the world are here too. It seems
right, but I don't think all of these matches are going to be in these big. I mean, it's going to take a while to build this thing up, right? I mean, you can't just drop this thing in Madison Square Garden on February and sell 40,000 tickets,
right?
To watch people play poker, right? It's going to have to be a lot of this Twitch stuff and a lot of this online stuff, and get the excitement of it built up before you actually. So a lot of tickets, I think.
All right, stay tuned. All right, Annie updates. Midnight Roads Hotel and Casino in Cripple Creek, Colorado will award one Annie Up Poker Cruise package for our January 24th sailing out of Los Angeles to the winner of its Annie Up Poker League, which is October 2nd to December 18th, and another package to the player who logs the most cash games hours during November 1st to December 18th. For all the details on this promotion and Annie Up Poker Cruises, visit AnnieUpCruises.com. And don't forget about our PAPE series. It's our free online fan series, which holds events on all dates ending with a 6. So the events this time around are October 16th, October 26th, and November 6th. The details can be found in the Annie Up Nation events group discussions on PokerRadius.com. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from John Warner. And he says, he's just wondering what you guys think of the latest DraftKings controversy and how it's a legal game of skill, even though it also involves luck, similar to online poker. If you have never listened to the Dan Levitard show on ESPN Radio, he actually had Bob Vulgaris on today, recently, and he stated that normal players are literally getting fleeced, and that the league is in cahoots with the professional players to basically take money from the average person who joins these things. You know, it's funny, too, because we've talked about this before on the show a little bit. We never really talked about it being daily fantasy. We just talked about there were fantasy football sites out there that you could gamble on. But the fact that it's every single day, and it's just like you could do it pretty much every day, anytime there's a game on, there's tournaments, you can get in for, you know, just at that minute and put money down and stuff. It was so much like online poker, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of friends who do this, and like, you know, after all this stuff came down, I'm emailing them saying, and calling them and texting them or whatever, and saying, hey, if you got any money on these sites, if there's a significant amount of money, get it off as soon as you can, because the hammer's coming down, and there's no even my brother was asking me about it last time I saw him. He's like, hey, this DraftKings thing, isn't that like poker? Like, why can't you do this? And I'm like, I know. So I'm actually rooting for this DraftKings thing to either them to say, hey, look, it really is legitimate. There's nothing you can do about it. And then, well, how is this different than poker? Poker can use that to propel them or shut it down, because why do they get to do it and we don't? You know what I mean? I don't really know what to think.
Yeah, I think all this stuff is fascinating now, particularly this latest controversy which Sean writes in about. It's most unfortunate. It's not surprising, I think, because this is going to happen. When these, same thing we saw with online poker, right? You know, everything was going great. Then you had the UIGA, and then we all got a little worried about that. And then we realized, it's not really that big a deal, right? And the reason why they didn't big a deal is because these sites were making so much money that they were going to ridiculous lengths to be sure they could do it, right? So that's why when you were putting money on, you were actually buying golf balls and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And that's what brought them down, right? Because you get too creative and too much. And I think that's kind of what's happening here with this latest DraftKings FanDuel thing that, you know, invariably there's so much money involved in it that someone's going to find a way to bring it down just by playing, right? Which is, I think, what's going to happen. I mean, yesterday, you know, Florida Gaming Watch, you know, one of the sites that I follow, I got seven texts from them on tweets about new investigations popping up on this. So this is certainly going to go through the ringer here pretty soon. And I think you're right. You know, I don't hold out a whole lot of hope that it's going to go through this ringer and people are going to go, okay, this is cool.
Yeah.
Or even, this is cool, but we need some oversight or regulation, which is obviously what these sites are trying to do. Now they're like, oh my gosh, we're in trouble. We'll be happy to have regulation. Bring it in, right? Because, you know, even with regulation, they're going to make a lot more money than if they're shut down, right? I think that's a long shot, too. I think most states are going to, if not the federal government, is going to just put an end to this pretty soon. So, you know, if this is something that you're interested in and haven't tried it yet, you might want to do it now and get in and get out before you don't have an opportunity. Because I really think they're going to bring it down. But it is. It's completely parallel to poker. And, you know, just before the show, I was on Poker Radius responding to someone and who was talking about, you know, asking why is online poker not working in New Jersey? It should, right?
Yeah.
And you jump in and said, well, it's a player liquidity issue, which it totally is. And then I furthered that by saying part of the player liquidity problem is a lot of online poker's players have gravitated to daily fantasy sports now.
Yep.
You know, it gives them the same kind of high. They it's a different skill, but it's still skill based. So they figured out a way to make money off of it. And quite honestly, they're making a lot more money off of playing on DraftKings than they are off of WSOP.com, I think. You know, the potential at least.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing for online poker advocates. You know, which side do you want to take on this? I mean, I think you laid it out beautifully there. You know, if they come back and say, hey, there's nothing wrong with this, now that's a huge argument for us to go back and say, oh wait, hold on now.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's all right, then how come this isn't all right? Poker isn't all right. And if they shut it down, then what does that mean? Does that mean it's tougher for online poker now? Because now people obviously have ammunition to say, hey, this is what happens when you let people gamble online, right?
Yeah.
A couple bad apples are gonna take advantage of you. Or is it this is why poker is better, because it's already better regulated, blah 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 blah, and it's a boost? I don't know the answer to that, but I would say, as optimistic as a person I am, I'm real pessimistic about any of this actually helping online poker.
Yeah, and I think you also wanted to talk a little bit about the story about the guy, the congressman who.
Yeah, well, I think this is kind of interesting, too, because, you know, we, obviously, to the extent that we've talked about this on the show before, is people like, how is this legal?
Yeah.
How can we be doing this but not online poker? And it has been, you know, there was a specific carve-out in the UIGA. So what was interesting was I saw in all this, you know, flurry of activity this week, one of the Minneapolis papers, the Star Tribune, actually got in contact with the former representative, Jim Leach. He's the guy that actually wrote this bill, who we all hated, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then he lost re-election next year. And I'm like, yeah, that's what you get, buddy. So they got in touch with him, and he just thinks it's ridiculous that people are saying that his bill is what made this legal. Now, his contention is, even though there was a carve-out in there for fantasy sports or skill-based games, as he says, but that's not what it says. Otherwise, we would
have... Otherwise, poker, yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
it specifically says fantasy sports in there. His claim is that just exempted them from the federal part of the bill that he wrote, but doesn't necessarily exclude them from any local or other federal laws that may deem it to be illegal, right?
Yep.
So he thinks it's kind of ridiculous that people took that and ran it to this extreme, to which I want to say, you're such a knucklehead on so many levels. I'm so glad you're not in Congress anymore, ruining our country, right? Because, I mean, how could you... I mean, here's the thing. If you didn't want somebody to take and run with that, why even put those words in there? No one's forcing him to put the words fantasy sports in that bill, right?
Right.
Obviously, somebody got to him and said, hey, I've been reading this bill, Jim, and way to go. But I just want to let you know fantasy sports is different. Go, why don't you throw those couple words in? Oh, thank you very much. And let me cash your check, right?
Yeah.
That's probably what happened, right? And now he's like, hey, that's not what I meant for it to happen, which is always what lawmakers say after they write a stupid bill. Right. You know, that's not what I meant it to say. Well, it doesn't matter what you meant it to do. It's what people are going to take it to do. So, but the end of all this, I think, is going to be that I think people are going to side with him on this and say, hey, that's not what was intended by this. And... you know, some states are going to say, hey, we're not going to do this. Actually, the FBI is investigating now, so who knows what that's going to mean. And then some states may do it, but regulate it, and then we're going to be in the same problem where we're poker now, right?
Yeah. It's
like daily fantasy sports in four states for 12 people, and no one can make... you know, you're never going to have another $2 million winner or DraftKings commercial to sit through on Sunday football, right?
Yeah. And those commercials, too, one of them at least, you'll see at the bottom, it says, conforms in compliance with UIGEA or something, and not a gambling. And I'm like, what do you mean it's not gambling? I mean, you don't control the football players. All you do is pick them, what they're going to do. Poker is way more skill than fantasy football. You may be able to... No, I'm sorry. It's way more skill.
I don't know about that.
There's way more skill in the ability to go against someone, and you're doing something and they're doing something to you, rather than watching something happen out there and picking the best people you think have the best stats. That is not a skill. That is being able to read.
It's a salary cap game. So.
Yeah, I know, but okay, there's a skill. There's a skill, but there's not a lot of skill.
Oh, no, there's a ton of skill. There's a reason that the same people are winning. I'm not trying to sound like Mike McDermott here, but there's a reason the same players are winning on Daily Fantasy every week. It's because they figured out how to exploit the weaknesses in this market. And that's really the real problem that we actually haven't even talked about, is that, you know, going back to what John Warner wrote here, that this guy says that, you know, players are being fleeced. I don't think they're actually in cahoots with professional players. I think what's going on is that there's some players that have figured out... some of them, you know, computer geniuses have got algorithms and stuff and figured out, you know, the push of a button, the ideal lineup to put in there. And you and me are sitting at home just going, oh, man, I think Adrian Peterson's going to have a great week this week, you know?
Right.
And you can't compete with that. It's the same problem we have with online poker. You know, as soon as somebody created a bot and put it in there, or if you're sitting there at home and you're playing just on your normal screen and the guy you're playing against has an HUD, has all this information on you that you don't have, it alters the skill, right?
Right.
So that's the skill we're talking about here. It's not so much the actual playing of poker or figuring out the best players. It's figuring out how to exploit the system. And that's where people are real skillful in this. And that's why I think it's really tough for little guys like us to actually win on these sites. So that's fun. And I don't know how you really get around that. You know, that's kind of the problem with all this stuff, even with online poker, that we're always going to have this argument, is that the internet is such a great thing, but you can't have all the great things of the internet without having all the bad things of the internet. And when you start trying to control the bad things, it's a lost cause.
Yeah, it's tough. That's why, and that's another reason why you have to at least have it regulated, so that the quote-unquote greatest minds in the world that are supposed to be looking out for us can be in there saying, okay, here's a way we can stop them from getting around this, or here's a way they can, they have to be vetted, or, you know, whatever the process would be to get the people who work there on the level, people who are running it on the level, whatever. You know what I mean? That's why regulation is so important. So you know that you're in a fair environment. And then if you're not good at it, you're not good at it.
Right. It's a different story. Yeah.
And you're an adult.
Quite honestly, that's the biggest mistake that these companies made, is letting their employees play on other sites.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole heart of this latest controversy is, you know, and both the sites say nothing happened, but, you know, let's be honest, something could happen. It didn't happen, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, you got some guy that's in charge of, you know, managing your site and sees how everybody's picking the players, and then he's like, oh, I can use that information and go pick my players on this other site, right?
Yeah.
That's terrible, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that should never be allowed. And it was interesting, too, that I had I actually don't have an account on any sites yet, but I signed up for some initially and just never got around to playing. But one of them, a smaller one, actually sent out an email right after this saying, you know, I want you to be clear that we have always banned our employees from playing on any daily fantasy site. Obviously, that wasn't the case at these big ones.
Right.
So had that been the case, then I don't think we would have been talking about it right now. I really don't. I mean, this is the problem. And this is why, you know, people always say, I hate regulation. But, you know, regulation is actually a good thing to some degree. I mean, it's over-regulation. That's the problem.
Right, over-regulation.
But certainly, any kind of regulated environment, the first thing they would say is, wait a minute. You're letting your guys play on a competing site? No, you're not. That's bad. Don't
right,
do that.
Right.
And then we wouldn't have this problem. But, you know.
All
what
right.
happens when the market takes over, right?
Yeah. Hey, you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo director of poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. AntiUp listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/AntiUp. Comes from our favorite action hero, Steve Seagal. He says, I raise all in on the turn in a cash game, and my opponent calls and asks whether I have the flush. I say yes. He turns over two pair. I turn over the flush, and he grabs his coat and starts to walk away before the river. Luckily for him, the other players called him back, letting him know he could still win. If the guy kept walking and nobody was paying attention and the river spiked him, what happens? Does it make a difference if he was 3 feet from the table or 15 feet? How about out the door when the river came? If he is a regular, would the casino hold the chips for him until next time?
All right, first of all, we want to congratulate Elliot on his new job. As you just heard, he's been taking over the Hollywood Casino in Toledo.
Yes.
Actually starts next week.
Yeah.
So for folks in Ohio, Michigan, and like that, now he's a lot closer. Go say hi to him.
Yep.
So here's how he answers this one. He says, your opponent called the bet and tabled his hand. It should be rule live. And if the hand finishes as the winner, it should be awarded the pot, regardless of a possible exit by that player. If the hand does go on to win, all chips should then be deposited in a casino cage for safekeeping, whether or not the player is known by the casino.
There you go. It'd be funny, though. I mean, if the guy doesn't know he won, and he comes back, he never claims that money.
So I guess here's the moral. Every time you walk in a casino, go to the cage, go, hey, got anything for me?
And then how do they even verify?
Just in case I walked out, I don't know. You're holding some chips for me?
Okay, so we got some money in the cage. We don't know who it's for. We don't have any photo or ID of this guy. We don't have a name for him. They're just money in the cage. How does he come back and claim it? Now they got to go to their camera videotapes and say, go and check to see that I won a hand?
I'm going to guess that most casinos would make a realistic effort to find him and give him his money. So, you know, you go to the tapes, you figure out where he was. If he had swiped in with the Players Club card, now you know who he is.
Yeah.
If not, I don't know if you follow the cameras back and kind of figure out a place where you could probably figure out where he is. I don't know. But if not, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, think about it. Think about, like, how many times I go back to Connecticut and play at Foxwoods or whatever. And then it's like, okay, I walked out because, you know, it's a long drive there from where I normally stay with my family. So if I'm losing that hand, I'm walking out and just going, and then I'm gone, and then I'll go back to Foxwoods for another year or two, and then I got to show up, and I'll be like, hey, you know, 2 years ago, I think I had a chance to win that hand. And you don't know who I am because I don't get the wampum card because I'm only going there once every couple of years and the points would expire by the time I go back to use them anyway. So any free money to sit in the cage that might be some random guy that I can have? kind of bizarre.
Yeah, I think that money always ends up, casino eventually is going to have it over the course of time, right?
I guess.
You know, I guess, I think maybe some of the stuff probably gets turned over to the state at some point, and it becomes, you know, I don't know if you've heard about these websites where you go to unclaim money, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, the states will run websites where, you know, for money that's abandoned in bank accounts and things like that. Maybe you didn't know about it. Maybe it was an inheritance that you didn't get all of or whatever. But every state has one of these registries. So, I mean, if you're bored someday, you might want to go around the states that you used to live in and find out where you got money waiting for you. I'm going to guess, I mean, just guess, that might be where that money eventually goes after statute of limitations. You know, we hold on to it for a year and then turn it over to the state for whatever.
If in April of 2011 you had two pair at the Foxwoods Casino and you walked out before the river was dealt, well, you've won. Bring photo ID.
Oh, my gosh. But again, this is, again, a kind of and not picking on Steve Persenny again, because it's an interesting question, but it's a nothing question, right? If you're all in, don't be one of these Jack Tumbles that gets up and walks away, right?
Don't tumble away, Jack Tumble.
Right, you know, control your freaking emotions. Stand up, be upset, watch the river come out, make sure you're not an idiot and didn't misread the board, and then when they say, thank you for playing, sir, then you can walk out huffing and puffing, right?
Yeah, be an adult.
It's just, oh, it's so frustrating when I see people get up and just walk away from the table, because there's always going to be somebody in there that goes, sir, why don't you come back? It's not over yet. And then that guy gets mad at you. Oh, I'm like, all right, fine, walk away. I don't care. Well, I just don't get it. I don't get how people hang on that tough, that they can't just sit there and wait.
The emotions, you know, your emotions. You're like, oh, I can't believe I'm going to get flushed.
Yeah, I mean, you can get upset. I mean, we all get upset at the table, but I mean, what good does it do to get up and walk away in the middle of the hand?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's childish. Absolutely childish.
Well, you know what's not childish? A new O'Malley's move. Let's get to it.
We don't know. We haven't heard it yet. Might be.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are in a single-table $50 buy-in live home game sit-and-go. We play in this one regularly, so we have a pretty good read on most players at the table. Each player started with 4,500 in chips, we are six-handed, down from 10, and we sit with 9,000. We are the second biggest stack at the table, with the largest being to our right. We are level 5, 2.5 hours into the game. The blinds are 150, 300, with a 50 ante. We are in the big blind. The blind's post, and it's folded to the button who limps. The small blind completes, and we look down at the 10 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds. This is a decent starting hand with a lot of possibilities, but we don't want to raise with it. We check. There's 1,200 in the pot, and the flop comes down the 10 of spades, 9 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds. This is a good flop for our hand, but we're surprised when the small blind leads out for 900 into the 1200 pot. Perhaps a better player would have raised here, but we just make the call. We want to reassess the situation on the turn. The button folds. The small blind is a solid player, but can lose interest in the game as the night goes on. He started the hand with about 10,000 in chips. There's 3,000 in the pot, and the turn is the 6 of hearts. Our opponent thinks for a while before checking. So, is it time to bring the hammer down? Or do we maybe want to just check it down? What's the move?
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And I moved this one up on the queue because it's from our good friend Jason Grimes, and it came from the Pearl River Poker Open Antiup Tour event this weekend.
Oh, I already know. Aces over Kings. Yay!
Yeah. Did I spoil that at the beginning of the show? Oh, shoot. But no, I want to give a lot of love to both Jason for playing and for Pearl River for having us out by using this hand this week.
Smart
so,
man.
Here it is. It's from the day one of the Pearl River main event, and we had three starting flights there. And at this particular point, the blinds are 400, 800 with a 100 ante, and this table was eight-handed. And Jason says, things a bit iffy lately, and I start the hand with 36,000.
Okay.
All right, so it folds to him, and he has 5 of diamonds, 5 of hearts. Unfortunately, he didn't tell us where he is, but by the rest of the hand, it looks like somewhere in middle position. So we're just going to assume he's in middle position. He's got 36,000, blinds are 400, 800, and he has pocket fives.
You know, it's so difficult to do hands of the week with out a lot of information. Like, if I were at a table for 2 hours, and it was a type of table where you just cannot limp because they'll just tear you a new one.
Right.
You know, or if you just, the minute you throw 800 in there and just hope to see a flop, somebody's going to make it 3,200. Now it's cost you 3,200 instead of you making it 2,400 and saving that 800 to see the flop. You know, it's like, okay, now I know what I should do with this hand. But going into this hand cold, when we're so many levels in that we already have 100 ante, it's hard for me to say. Generally, when I enter a pot first, I like to enter it for a raise, a disguise, and I always want to enter it with the same raise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get too cute. But at the same time, too, when I usually have a pair like this, I kind of like to set mine and get in for as cheap as possible. So it's really one of those tweener hands where I could lean either way. If it's a passive table, I'm limping. Because if everybody limps, then you can pretty much represent any hand that flops. But if you hit your set and someone else tries to represent, now you're going to make a ton of chips. So if it's one of those aggressive tables, I'm gonna play it like it's aces, and I'm going to come out raising and then just keep control of the hand for as long as I can. I don't know anything about this table, so generally I like to limp with if I'm in like middle to late position, but then again, I only have that many people behind me, so maybe I have a chance here to steal the blinds or get heads up with someone out of position with a pair. So generally, I like to raise when I come into a hand, especially in tournaments. So
right.
I guess I'll raise. I'll probably make it 2,600 because there's some antes out there too, and I don't want to make it just 24. It's probably not enough to get somebody to fold in the big blind if they have Jack 10 or something. So at least make it costly for them. I'll probably make it like 2,600.
It's interesting that you want to make it costly, which is not, there's nothing wrong with that, but I think this is kind of an interesting straddle thing here between the two things you're mentioning, set mining and also not committing too much money to the hand. So,
right.
You know, normally I'm going to do a 2x raise. That's my normal start. It's about 2,000. You know, sometimes you count the ante, sometimes you don't. So, you know, somewhere between 2,000, 2,200. Now you're right, that's probably not enough to get anybody out, but I don't necessarily think that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to establish dominance. I'm raising, right? So regardless of where I'm raising, I'm taking control of the hand, you know, unless somebody re-raises me. But at the same time, I'm not committing a ton of money. This is kind of why the whole 3x has become 2x over the course of time, right? That, you know, the 2X is often going to do the same thing a 3X is, but it costs you a little less money. So I guess I'm not too worried about what's going to happen here. If I raise to 2,000 and everybody calls, then I'm still set mining. I'm just set mining at a higher price.
Right.
But I have more to win, right? But if that 2,000 actually works and I get a heads up, then, you know, I still took control of the hand. So now I still don't know whether I had aces or fives or something else. So I still can play that card, which is why you're raising first, right? You're not raising because you're hoping to hit your five and then feel emboldened. You're raising because now you can bet lots of flops that people have to respect because they don't know what you have, right?
So we basically are hoping for the same thing. You're just hoping to get it for a less...
Yeah, and again, back, I mean, where I kind of learned this all from was Jonathan Little at one of his classes on our Antioch Cruise, which was great. Staterooms at antiochcruises.com. But no, his point made sense to me. I mean, it was one of those, there's been a few things in poker where somebody's been able to say something to me, and it was just like, you know, getting hit by a hose. Like, oh my gosh, that so makes so much sense. I don't know why I didn't think of that. And his point was that, you know, again, poker's a long con, right? So, you know, if you doing 2.5x versus 3x over the long term, you know, yeah, there's going to be some pots where you're letting people in that maybe that extra couple hundred or thousand or whatever it is would have kept them out. But if you're raising at the right frequency, which is often, then you're going to be saving a lot more money this way. And you'll find that the 2.5 and the 3 still generally produces the same result. So, you know, there's going to be people that any raise is going to get them out of the hand. So, and a min raise, so you're doing slightly more than a min raise, I guess is what the point is.
Okay, let me ask you a question. If they accomplish the same thing, and you're going to win at the same frequency that you would have won with either raise amount, then wouldn't it stand to reason that if you raised more, you'd win more, and it would make up for the money that you're saving by not raising
more? I think the point was is that there's a lot of flops that could go bad for you, and you're going to have to fold at some point. So if you're committing less early on, again, the idea with raising is to win the pot right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really,
or, well, at least to trap somebody with a big hand to build.
Right. I mean, really, with any hand, you begrudgingly, if you have aces, you want some action or kings, right? But really, you're happy to win the hand, right? Because again, aces, you only win how many times? 30-some percent, right? So, I mean, if you can win... Here's the thing. Let's think about it this way. If every time you raise preflop, you won the hand, you would do it all the time, right? And you would raise only the minimum. Or let's say 90%. 90% of the time, you're going to win the hand. How's that?
Okay.
There's still some mystery, right? Then why would you ever commit more than that?
Yeah, no, I understand. But I'm just saying that if you're going to commit more and win more, it's going to make up for the times that you didn't raise. You know what I mean? The money you're saving, you're going to earn more by raising more. Because you're getting more calls and more money.
Generally speaking, though, you're going to lose more hands than you win. So, you know, where you win is stacking people, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you can win four hands in a tournament and win the tournament.
Right.
Or you could win 400 hands and still finish outside the money. So it's all about chips, right? So this is kind of a chip management thing, I think, is how what he's trying to say. I mean, I know what you're trying to – what you're getting at is if you raise more, there's more in there to win. But I think his point is that you're going to lose a lot of those hands. So if you lose them with committing less money, then you're going to save money. And then if you actually hit your big hand, you're still going to stack the guy and get the stack. It doesn't matter how much you raise preflop.
Right. Okay.
That makes sense? That's
yeah.
It took me a while to get there.
I'm starting to come around.
That's generally the thing.
So. I'm going to crunch the numbers later. Get back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Good luck with that.
All right, so we have pocket fives. You and I are both raising. You're just raising a little less.
Crunch those numbers. Tell me who to pick and draft.
So what does he do?
All right, so he decides to raise to 2K.
Okay, that's what you're basically going to do.
Yep, and he gets one caller who is two seats to his left. Again, we don't know positions, but obviously we're out of position.
Right.
Pot is 6K now, and the flop is the Jack of Diamonds, Jack of Hearts, Nine of Diamonds, and we are first to act.
Well, that's a nice little flop for us. If you know what I mean, if this guy's got a Jack, then we're screwed. We don't really put him on a Nine. But if he has something like Eights, then he's going to think it's a nice little flop for him, too, thinking we have something like Ace Queen or Ace Jack, or not Ace Jack, but maybe Ace Queen or Ace Ten or something, so, or even King Queen. So I took control. I'm going to have to bet, you know, I'd probably bet like $4,000 here. You know, there's $6,000 in the pot. It's about two-thirds.
And this is kind of tough because what you said makes a lot of sense, right? So if he has eights, he's going to be just as excited as we are, right?
Right.
And obviously, he's got his beat here. So the problem, this is, I think it illustrates the problem of being out of position now, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if we bet and get raised, I mean, our first instinct is a jack, right? But it could be pocket fours or pocket trays, right? It feels the same way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think somebody's calling a raise with threes or fours and then doesn't hit isn't going to raise us. I know that they could say, hey, it's a good flop.
But it doesn't make any difference. It's no different than fives, right?
I know. But we took control of the hand. They're a calling hand.
Very
so.
True. But they're also in position, so yeah. They have a lot more power.
If they don't believe us, too, yeah. Yeah, I still think you have to bet, though. You can't just give up control of it. You're screwed.
No, I was just making a point that right. It sucks. We'll raise you at this point. This is a great spot for anybody to raise you with at this point to really put you to a test, I think. All right, so our hero says, I have two pair, and if there are two jacks there, he probably doesn't have one, so I bet 2,500, and he snap raises to 8,000.
Yeah, one, I don't like that amount of a bet, to be honest with you. That's like a little more than a third of the pot. I save that size of a bet later on when I'm trying to, you know, control the pot size.
The only advantage of that size bet is we could probably fold
we
here.
We can get away from it, yeah.
I could bet a lot of our hand. I'm saying, I'm not saying I would, but
right,
you get that,
right.
That, you know, if we would have bet 4,000, it's a little tougher.
And you said you snap raised to, what was it, 8,000?
8,000.
8,000.
Pretty significant raise.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that he doesn't believe us, but, you know, we had a pair of fives. We carried the shenanigans as far as we can. I don't know if I'm going to call that raise. The funny thing is that why would I call? I'm going to either take control of this hand and say, you know what, I've got the jack, or I've got an overpair, I don't believe you, and I might rebluff him if I feel like he's the kind of guy that's just
the only
making
option,
move.
Right?
Yeah, because you can't just call here. I don't think calling is a I think is a mistake. Because then what are you going to do, bet out on the flop if you don't hit your five?
Yeah.
If a scare card doesn't come?
Now you've turned your hand into a two-outer.
Yep. And then you're checking to him, and then he's going to bet again, and now you've risked $8,000 for nothing. So
I guess the only advantage is if you check and he checks behind, maybe he's just taking a stab at the pot. And yeah, then you're going to have to bet on the river and hope that he, you know, to give him a chicken at that point. Anywhere you go, you're committing a lot of money to this hand.
With fives.
Fives.
Yeah. So I think I would let it go. It's sad, but I think I would let it go. It's too bad that he snap raises us. It feels like a snap raise is like he doesn't believe us, though, but I don't care.
But again, the problem was being out of position, right? Yeah. So, I mean, this is exactly... I think this is a power play on this guy's play point of view. I mean, obviously, no one could put him on jacks there necessarily, I don't think.
There's no reason to raise with jacks. If you got a jack in your hand, there's no reason to raise.
Well, so. I don't know. There's two diamonds and maybe some weird straight things. So, yeah, maybe there is.
The snap raise, though, it feels like he doesn't have a jack. It just feels like he doesn't have a jack. It feels like he could wait one more street to
beat. Right,
to
but even if he doesn't, what, you know, what can we beat now?
We're beating threes and fours.
Deuces, trays, and fours.
And bluffs, yeah. And bluffs. So, I'm going to let it go. It's too narrow of a range that I can beat, you know. The only thing we're beating really is a bluff. I don't put him on 2, 3, 4. So, maybe a 9. Maybe ace 9. But even that, I can't beat it. So, what am I doing?
Right.
Unless I'm going to bluff him back, I'm letting go of this hand now. I'm saving money.
Yeah, you're going to have to have a real specific plan of attack for these next two streets if you call here.
Yeah, because even if he folds, he only committed 4,500 to this. He still has 31,500 left. With blinds at 4 and 8, I mean, just let it go. You've got almost 40 big blinds. So.
All right, so our hero says, this is a problem of mine, but I don't like staring at people. I feel self-conscious, but I do glance at him in a stack quickly and feel he has me easily covered. He's got a ton of chips, and I think he's just trying to get me to go away. I've invested 4K, and I'm down to 32,000. Not pot committed right now. So I think he also knows this, and I think things through and just call. Well, like I said, you got to have a plan going here, and I think that's really tough at this point to come up with a real solid plan.
Yeah, this is tough.
Now, if by calling here, you can't bet the turn, right?
Yeah, unless a five comes.
Because why wouldn't you have raised? So that's true, unless a five comes. But even then,
you're not going to bet it because
right,
it's not
exactly.
Basically
so
huge.
So you've given up your whole ability to bet on one of the last two streets. Now, obviously, you could check raise, but that. Going back to what examples we're talking about, you know, you bet on a horse race, you could do all your great handicapping, but you can't predict that the horse is going to break a leg, right?
Right.
So you can't predict that this guy is, you can't count on the fact that this guy's going to bet, right? You can't count on the check raise. So the whole turn is messed up now. You have no good strategy for the turn. So now you got to think what happens on the river at that point. So, you know, if it goes check, check, then you take control on the river and then he raises you, which could happen, right?
Yeah.
A lot of players are going to check behind on the turn for pot control regardless of what they have, right? Or do not. Do you just check and try to check down? Now, if you're trying to check down, now you're trying to win this pot through four checks on the next two streets.
Which is just not going to happen when somebody check raises you, or not check, but raises you on the flop and calls your raise pre-flop. You're not going to get four checks after that. There's no way. So, yeah.
I think there's just a lot of trouble here with no good plan. So,
and right. Now he's committed 10 grand to this hand. That's basically a third of his stack.
Yeah.
You know, with fives and out of position.
All right. The turn is his money card, he says. The six of spades. No, wait. Damn, I have pocket fives. Time for a vision check. Thanks for teasing me, dealer.
Oh, man.
All right. I think it's obvious that we're checking here, right?
Yep.
It's really tough for us to bet anyhow. He did. So that's exactly what he does. And the opponent checks behind.
Oh, jeez. Nothing you like more than saying, you're not going to get a check out of this guy, and then he checks.
Yeah.
Well, that's
again,
good.
Like I said, we don't know. I mean, I think the surface response is that, all right, he was making a play on that flop. We called and ruined his plan. Check. Now he's like, all right, I'm done.
So but now that we wake up.
It could also be, hey, there's a lot of money in this pot already, and now I'm going to check.
For pot control.
Yeah, for pot control, and then, you know, still, I mean, this guy's got a lot of hands that I got showdown value now, right?
Yeah.
That beat us.
Yeah.
So now we check on the river, and he bets, and then in our mind, we're like, wow, oh, he's just making a move at the pot, which he could be, but whatever he's making a move at the pot is probably better than what we have. You know, assuming we don't have a five, but this is tough.
Yeah. Wow, check behind. But that's good, though. That's good for us. It saves
us. Well, yeah,
somebody.
It gives us an opportunity to boat up, which is the only reason, only way I think we're really going to win this hand. So.
Yeah, and it saves us money. And it gives us a chance to boat up, like you said. You didn't have to fold right there. So
yeah, it's the best-case scenario for calling on the flop.
Right, so now it's like it costs you four well, grand
second,
on each
second
street.
Second best case.
Right, instead of eight grand.
okay. So he checks behind, and now our hero says, I'm 65% sure he's got ace high, maybe sevens or eights. I guess he said 65%, so I'll let him go on that, because I don't really actually know the percentages. But, there's lots of other hands, so maybe they all fit into 35% that he's not considering, but... all right, the river is a five. He says, this time it actually is the five. Great job, dealer. Says, I tell dealers this all the time. The only way I win hands is when they give me good cards. The only way I lose hands is when I screw up the cards they give me.
That's funny. Okay, well, now that he checked behind, it's going to make it look like we're trying to steal it from him, that we don't believe him. So it's perfect for us.
Really, we got 80 shades of lucky here, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I think.
I'd bet like 10 grand. Because there's 16, and then there's the original... four, so there's 20. It's probably 20-ish in there anyway, so 10, half it's probably good. So I'd bet like 10 grand now.
I might even bet a little bit more just to really lay it on that I'm trying to buy this pot.
Yeah, maybe. The other thing too is that you want to look like you're stealing it too. I guess that would convey that.
Yeah, I think, generally, if you bet more, if you're betting...
I just want value, though.
You got two options. You either do the post-oak where you're betting a little bit less than you should... them to think, all right, he's trying to trap me, I'm not going to fall for what I fall,
right?
Which I don't think really has ever worked since Doyle Brunson wrote about it, right? and then the other option is to bet a lot, or just you give that impression that you're trying to steal the pot and make him think about it, and then he's going, all right, well, I think you're trying to bluff it, so I'm going to call. It's really weird. Those two examples are what makes poker so awesome, right?
Yeah. Because you want to get value for this hand, too. You know, you want to get value for it. You want it to be like, all right, I didn't believe... When you checked, I figured you didn't have anything, so I'm trying to steal it from you. And no matter what I put out there, he might call. So, but if you put too much out there, he's going to be like, damn, even if I have him beat, I don't know if I can afford this. I want to make sure I get value for this full house.
Right. So I guess probably the safest thing is about a half pot. I just think, you know, if we're trying to... If we have a read on this player that how he plays, we might bet less than half or more than half.
Yeah.
And I'm going to default to more than half because that usually works out better. But I'm fine with any.
Yeah, we're basically betting
really,
from
I'm fine
10
with
and 15.
Any reasonable
so.
Bet. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's bet.
All right. Hero says I wait about 10 seconds and check.
That's interesting.
And our opponent bets 15,000.
Nice. That worked out nice. If provided we have the best hand.
Always that caveat, right?
Yeah, there's always Jack 9 out there. You never know. And then he's checking the turn to make it look like he doesn't have anything. But I don't know. I think I'd be happy with the call here. I don't know if I would shove on him because there's always that possibility, and it's not a cash game. You can't just reach into your pocket, you know?
Well, there are legitimate hands. He could have a jack, which is brutal.
7-8.
Yep. And nines.
You could have nines full.
Yep.
And then you check the turn to be cagey.
And even sixes full have us beat, right?
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think 15 is about what we were going to bet anyhow, right?
Yeah, let's just call it.
So let's just be happy with that and a little protection in case not. So now, where does that leave us in our chip stack, though, actually? So 8, 10, so we're around 26.
Still about 16 grand.
So
still have 20 big blinds enough to do the shoving and stuff, right?
Right. Yeah. Because here's the thing: if you raise anything, you got to raise. You get a shove.
All
right?
In, yeah.
And then if the guy turns over one of those hands that has his beat.
Yeah, because pocket sixes would make sense if he. That's why he checked the turn, because he boated up and he was just. pocket sixes make sense because of that flop, too. If he does, he says, oh, that's a good flop for me. This guy has ace-king. He missed.
Right, yeah, exactly what we're talking about, right?
Yep. Pocket sixes would make sense to beat us, so why shove? You're only going to get called by a better hand. You might get called by three jacks, but really, yeah, let's just call.
Yep. All right, so here it says, and here I see where I made a huge mistake. That's never good, right?
Yeah.
It says, when he moves to 15,000 into the pot, it's obvious I have him covered. Stupid orange and red 1,500 chips are so close in color, I read all of his 500s as thousands. So the raise on the flop now seems more like a bet to push out a flush or straight draw, protecting his trips. I suppose he could also have done that with eights or sevens. But on the river, I feel confident there is a jack in his hand.
Well, I mean, if you really, really felt that way, you might as well try to get more money because he can't fold now. But I just don't want to take... how your information is still incomplete. I would still call.
Yeah. He says, I hit what has to be my miracle card on the river. Jack 9 and 9-9 make no sense. With those hands, he shouldn't ever be raising me on the flop. So the only hand I could be losing to is pocket sixes or jack six, but that hand doesn't seem very likely. Pocket sixes could be there, but if so, it's fine. I count out 15K, push it over to the side, and count down the rest of my chips. About 8 to 9K left. I wait about another 10 seconds before I go all in. If he had me covered, I would have snap pushed, but I wanted to get a slight hesitation vibe from me. Like he isn't pot committed already, though, right? So a little mind games there.
Right.
Before I could table my hand, he rolls over ace-jack.
Yeah.
Says, I show my hand, and he was less than happy. Stands up, utters words not fit for rebroadcast, throws his cards down the table, and mutters, 5-5? God, you're such... And his tirade is lost in soft muttering as he gathers his belongings, a shattered husk of a man.
Well, here's the deal, too, is knowing earlier in the show that he cashed in the event, I'm trying to, like, at least make it seem like he could have lost his hand and survived it. But once it got down to he put out 15 grand or whatever, and he's going to think about calling it or raising, you know he won. You know what I mean? So at some point in this hand, you're thinking, okay, we knew this guy cashed, so he's not going to go out here, and he's going to have to do some incredible double ups to if he...
Well, he could have re-entered, too.
Yeah, I guess he could have re-entered, but I didn't think he did. So, but, yeah, Jack, I mean, ace-jack is the only hand that... The way he played it, too, makes sense, I guess, except for the turn. That
so
turn
his last bad. Line was, and then the Rob Salobrew imitator on his left says a bit too loudly and a bit too soon, yeah, but you let him get there.
Yeah, the turn he should have bet.
Ace-jack guy flies into a quiet rage and stomps off. Yeah, that turn check was terrible.
Yeah, what was he checking for? You know, I mean, I guess he's hoping to induce a bluff, and he did if we didn't have a five. You know what I mean? If we didn't hit our five, I mean. So it's interesting. If we bluffed at it and then the guy shoves, you know, then it's a brilliant move. But we know that it's a terrible move, especially with all the diamonds and straight cards out there.
Yeah, it's interesting because we were talking about you might check behind for pot control, and when you do that, it's because... I don't know. You don't really know where you are, or you're not too worried about some cards coming. I mean, here we had all kinds of worry about ace jack there.
Yeah.
And the least of what I'm thinking of is a pocket pair like this where the guy's going to hit a two-adder on me. I'm thinking more about the straights and flushes and things like that. So this is not a situation where I'm going to exercise pot control. I mean, I've got a hand that's valuable but vulnerable. And I'm firing again.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of mistakes throughout this hand on both sides, really. I mean, really need a miracle two-outer to win. And the jack guy, why is he snap-raising that flop? That's only... Snap-raises are meant to intimidate. Why would you want to scare off somebody?
Well, good,
fives?
If it's a reverse psychology, that's the only thing.
Yeah. So, but is it at that level, really? I don't know.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I
know. Wow, what a... Well, hey, we're happy Jason cashed. We're happy he won that, so... Worked out
well, that's
for everybody.
That's the weird thing, though, right? I mean, if he snap raised there, I mean, there's no reason he wouldn't bet on the turn of that. A guy just going to snap raise that hand on the flop has no business pot control checking on the turn, right?
Yeah. I mean, that six does nothing. It doesn't complete a straight. It doesn't complete a flush. Doesn't even. It only puts a draw out there that gets there. But I mean, really, are you worried? Are you checking behind for 7-8? No, you want to protect it. So why are you even thinking about checking there? It was just a bad play on that guy's part altogether. He deserves to lose.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, just before we let it go, I want everybody on the Poker Radius recap this week to tell us what takes more skill, online poker or fantasy football?
Question.
I want to see everybody talk about that.
Daily fantasy football.
Daily fantasy football. I'm going to put that on the recap and see what they say. So I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.